You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Josh Swallows.
Welcome back to Josh Swallows Broadway. I am so happy to be here. I'm here with somebody that I am a genuine fangirl, fan child of. This person literally has the voice of an angel, the acting chops of a god, and the heart of a fucking unicorn. I'm sorry that I said the F word, Dad. I know I'm going to get a text about it. But you know what? It's my show and not yours. So who's the failure now? Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, Andrew Barth Feldman!
What an introduction. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for having me, Josh.
Oh my gosh. Dude, I'm obsessed with you. From the first time that I met you, I was like, you are the nicest person in the world. And then I got to know your talent more. And what you have is so special and so unique, and beyond all that, you're just a nice, nice guy. And
it's all very kind of you to say.
No, you're Rob McClure Jr.
That's all I want to be in this world. Thank you very much.
Stop it. Is that why you chose I Love Betsy for the Jimmy Awards?
You know, I didn't want to do... So I had a voice teacher, James Donegan. He's fantastic. And he was like, you have to bring I Love Betsy. And you could bring two songs to the Jimmys and they pick. So I brought that. And naturally, I brought Larger Than Life from my favorite year. Because, of course, I'm a young white man. And so I brought...
And also, screw you, Dad. He was bigger and better and larger than
I really got into it. I dug in. I really gave it everything. And then Adam Cantor, who was my coach at the Jimmys, which I will always be forever thankful for, he was like, you have to do I Love Betsy. And it was rare that day that normally he was like, what are you feeling? What do you want to do? He's like, no, you have to do I Love Betsy. And I thought if I had any shot of winning, which I didn't think I did anyway, but I was like, if I have any shot of winning, it's with a ballad. So Adam is, should I bring another song? Like, is there a better song I could do? Maybe I have like a bunch of songs I could do. And he was like, you have to do I Love Betsy. I insist that you do I Love Betsy. But I did see Rob in Honeymoon in Vegas and Chaplin and like everything he's ever done. And I'm just so in love with him. He's like, he and I'm so thankful that he's, you know, we're friends now. He's just the best.
I can guarantee you, you're the little brother he always wished he had because he's the youngest of a bunch of ladies. I met Rob years ago. We were doing possibly the worst production of Grease at a regional theater that doesn't exist anymore in South Jersey called the Lenape. And that's where he met his wife, who I was doing shows with in Philly for a long time. Yes. And she was in a really terrible relationship, like leaving a relationship, and they met and just fell in love. And I was like, who is this guy? Who is this nice, friendly, amazing person that just loves working and loves people? And then like you come along and it's just like Rob when we were your age.
That's extraordinarily kind. That's very, very, very kind of you. That means the world. I will keep that compliment forever and ever.
Well, what got you into performing?
I've really pinned it down to a lot of things because they always ask, and it was kind of the big story. It was like, how did this happen? Where did you come from when all the Dear Evan Hansen stuff was happening? So I pinned it down to a couple things. I went to Disney World for the first time when I was 6 months old. Because my family would go every year and they promised my older sister that nothing would change when I was born. So I went to Disney World for the first time when I was 6 months old, began my love for that. I was 3 years old and I saw Beauty and the Beast on Broadway.
Hell yeah, you did.
Hell yes, I did. That was my first show. I got to go backstage because my friend's cousin was Chip.
No.
And, I lost my mind. I actually was terrified because like, we went into like the castle set and we had to leave the tour because I freaked out so much.
Was it Nick Jonas? Because Nick Jonas.
It was not Nick Jonas as Chip. But I don't know who it was. I don't remember. I'm not even really friends with this person anymore. But it was like a childhood friend. But I saw the show and on a subconscious level, obviously not in so many words. I was 3 years old. I just kind of understood it as this is another way to get there. This is another way to get into that world of just escape and immersion and storytelling. And then a year later, I was 4 years old and High School Musical came out. And I was like, okay, I can do this and be cool. And like, I can like do this and like, it's a thing we can just go and do theoretically when I'm in high school. And then I found out you could do it when you're 8 years old. And so I was 8 years old. And I was in the worst production of Annie that has ever been staged ever.
What were you?
I was Mr. Bundles.
Oh, I bet you were the cutest Mr. Bundles.
I was the girl playing Miss Hannigan, I believe, was 14. And we were doing where I was like up to her knee. And I was like, come on, Aggie, why won't you go out with me? And it was truly, really, really awful. But I caught the bug. I mean, the bug was already in my system. I just hadn't.
Is there video footage of you as Mr. Bundles? There has to be.
Not, I mean, like, maybe on some camcorders in some garage in my house or something. I don't know.
Well, but, what are you up to right now? Go and find it.
There's so much stuff around. There's so many home videos. I am the youngest in my family. There is so much to sift through to find that. I would love to find that.
Now, you're the youngest. How many others are there?
So I have a sister and then I have two cousins who we were raised together. So really I have three siblings, and two, so one sister and two brothers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are any of them in theater?
My sister did theater in high school. My brother is an incredible musician. And my other brother, loves music and stuff, but he was never really a musician, but, yeah, my brother, Matt, is an incredible musician. And my sister did theater in high school, but it never really, she didn't stick with it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Wow. So before, with the Jimmy Awards, were you intending on becoming a performer professionally?
Yeah, the answer is yes. My mom, we referred to my mom as the anti-stage mom because she so desperately did not want me to do this. And it wasn't because like she thought it was, you know, like glamorous or what. She just thought it was an insecure profession and she is correct in that notion. She was absolutely right in saying that like, this is a terrible and reckless idea. And I was like, I know. And I think around middle school, I started to lose confidence in myself and I started like picking up like computer programming. And then what kind of happened at the same time is that I was cast as, I was cast as Galileo in a production of We Will Rock You. And, which is like the leather jacket, B flat singing guy. And I'd never been cast as that kind of role. And I was introduced to this new group of people who were like, oh, you're really good at this. And that had never happened to me before. And then I went to computer programming camp and hated every second of it. And I was like, there's nothing else I can do. I can't do anything else but this. So that's what happened is there was no world where I ever did anything else.
Wow. Yeah, same. I mean, I was terrible at everything. I didn't have computer programming. Like when I didn't fit in middle school, I was like, let me try cigarettes. Like, why don't you try a hobby? No, cigarettes are good. So that's amazing. Now the Jimmy Awards are like, can you explain to me what the Jimmy Awards are? When I was in high school, we had something called CETA, which was Southern California Educational Theater Association, where all of our high school plays would get judged and the three lucky plays perform. The difference is nobody gave a shit about CETA. But the Jimmy Awards, people are Jimmy Awards.
Yeah, I don't really know what it is that people give such a shit about. I think it's the medleys. I think it's, well, I'll get into what it is and then I'll talk about the genius medleys. But so the Jimmy Awards are basically the National High School Musical Theater Awards. It starts by you have adjudicators come to your school. Like your teacher gets, as long as it's someone with a theater degree, to come to your school and score the eligible roles, the people playing the eligible roles in the show that you're doing, which are like, we were doing Catch Me If You Can, so I think it was me, I was Frank Jr., the person playing Hanratty, and the person playing Brenda, and I think that was it. Yeah, they come and score you, and then you go to your regional awards, which in New York is the Roger Reese Awards, but there's one, more than one in most states. The two winners, the male and female winner of that, of those regional awards go to the Jimmy Awards. So there are like 50 kids in the Roger Reese, that's narrowed down to two, and then they go to the Jimmy Awards, which is like 80, now closer to 90 or something kids. I think the reason why people care about it so much is the medley. So Michael Moritz is the music director, and he makes these medleys of the songs from the show that you did at your high school, and he weaves them together into a medley so that like Sweeney Todd is tap dancing behind Snoopy, or like, you know, Hyde from Jekyll and Hyde like sings The Confrontation, and it leads into like It Takes Two from Into the Woods. You know, like, it's fun.
That sounds like shrooming. That sounds great.
It's so much fun to watch, and it was so much fun to be a part of. I think my medley was, let me think. So it was Eddie from Dogfight into Pippin into me as Frank Jr. And then there was like the Grasshopper from James and the Giant Peach. There were two Quasimodos. There were like, it's so much fun to watch. It is delightful, and the orchestrations are unbelievable. It was my first time singing that song with a full orchestra. Because my school was just piano and drums, because that's, you know, how high school is. But here I'm singing with
a full orchestra. That's how Off-Broadway is, too. So in a way, that was good training.
It was great training to work with that. But to sing it with a full orchestra, to sing goodbye with a full orchestra was crazy. Completely absurd. On a Broadway stage. Like, that was, I blacked out. I lost circulation in my hands. I don't remember it at all.
Were you able to be in a Broadway dressing room?
Yeah, we were in, like, so it was at the Lion King Theater, so I think we were in, like, the male ensemble dressing room, and the girls were in the female ensemble dressing room.
Have been like, bitch, put me in Zimba's room. Where's Zimba's room, bitch?
There were lots of, Natalie Walker, if you haven't read this article, you absolutely should. It's this, she did this article, she was there the whole week that we were there at the Jimmys, and reported and did a very accurate, hilarious, beautiful story. And she talked about how there were all these icons of like queer culture around the room, and like posters of Beyonce and stuff around our like male ensemble Lion King dressing room, which was the exactly perfect way to set the tone, considering we were weirdly mostly straight guys. Like, most of us were straight, which was just a weird thing.
The cast of Lion King was like, prove it. Prove you don't like Beyonce. Prove it, you homo. Prove it.
My roommates were actually all gay, which was, I had a really awesome, like, they were the coolest guys.
And we're fine.
They were the kind that, like, they told me how to dress every day, which was awesome. I totally needed that. It was the best.
Did they pick out the red shirt, black tie?
They didn't. That was my mom, and she later said, I would have given you something better if I knew you were going to win. Which is very funny.
That's hilarious.
I didn't know what to wear because we saw Dear Evan Hansen that week, funnily enough. And I had no idea how to dress myself for that occasion.
Now, what was it like when you saw Dear Evan Hansen?
Well, that was my third time seeing it. And it hit me harder than it ever had before because it was so... The first time I saw it, I mean, I couldn't even speak. Afterward, I got in the car and my family was like, how was it? And I was like, I don't want to talk about it. And they made fun of me for it forever. But like, I really couldn't, like, it just expressed something to me about myself that I had never considered or faced before. And before I saw it, there were people telling me, I'll never forget Mark Timonelli, who runs Broadway Workshop, who is a very, very good friend of mine. I Waving Through a Window came out, and I said to Mark, I want this show to flop so that I can sing the song in every audition forever. And he said, no, you want the show to succeed so you can be in it. And so people were always sort of telling me that I was right for this role. And when I saw it, I was just so thunderstruck by what Ben was doing, the story, what it was saying that had never been said before, at least not to me, and certainly not really on stage in a musical. So it changed my life completely, entirely.
Would you fantasize about being Evan Hansen? Like when I was a kid, absolutely. I lived in an area with no other kids. There was no sidewalks to ride a bike. There was nothing. And I would just sit in my room and sort of listen to musicals and be in them at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is that
the
kind of kid that you were too?
1,000,000,000%. There were so many videos of me, you know, I was lucky enough to like have so many theater kids around me all the time. Those were sort of the people that I connected with. And so there are so many videos of me at different stages of my life singing, Waving Through a Window, you know, for like my friends, cause we would just be like, you know, showing off or whatever. And I would be doing it poorly cause I was, you know, 14 or whatever, but it, yeah, absolutely. That was it. That was the end all be all of dream roles for me.
Your performance in that was so profound.
Thank you.
I've seen the show multiple times. I've been lucky enough to have friends be lucky enough to be a part of the show from day one. And I will admit, you know, I had a lot of loss in my life via suicide. And the first time I saw it, I was greatly offended by it. And then I went back and saw it again, and it was like an onion. Like I had a new sense of how special it really is. And when I saw you, it really just settled in with how beautiful the show is and what it's about and it means. And your performance was absolutely extraordinary.
Thank you so very much. That really means the world.
You're so very welcome. So with the Jimmy Awards, you won, which is amazing.
Unbelievable, yeah.
And then what happened?
Frankly, it was minutes before because Tara Rubin, the casting director of Dear Evan Hansen,
I love, one of the sweetest people in the world.
Best ever. And she was a judge. The legend that Stacey tells, and I have no reason to believe that this isn't true, Stacey Mindich, the producer of Dear Evan Hansen, is that at intermission, after she heard me sing goodbye in my medley, she texted Tara, "We need to get this kid in the room." Tara came up to me at the after party and said, "We should have a meeting soon about what your future looks like." And before that meeting, I had gotten an email to audition for the male swing in Dear Evan Hansen. And this was days after the Jimmys. And this would be literally my first audition for a Broadway show. And
what grade were you in?
It was the summer after my sophomore year.
Wow.
Yeah. In high school. And so I had this meeting with Tara, and I was like, "Hey, we're talking about college. We're talking about next steps. This is all amazing. What is this? What do I do?" Like, and she's like, "You're going to be great. Don't worry about it." I go, there is a work session in the afternoon, and then in the evening I have this audition. And it's Michael Greif, Tara Rubin, Alex Lacamoire, Benj Pasek, Justin Paul, Stephen Levins, and Stacey Mindich. Everyone.
No pressure.
Everyone is there. And a lot of other Jimmy's kids past Jimmy's kids who I'd sort of gotten to talking to had sort of a similar situation where right after the Jimmy's, they'd been asked to come in and they were like, "This is like equivalent to my 10th callback. What you're going in to do is what I did after 9 auditions." And so I go and I do the Evan material. I do, I think, like 2 or 3 songs and 3 or 4 scenes. And Michael says, "Andrew, I want you to move on to the Jared stuff, but I want you to know that we are really going to cherish the Evan material that you just performed for us." And I was like, "What is happening?" I did one Jared scene. I left the room. Tara Rubin took a picture of me because she said I would want to remember this day. And I think it was 2 or 3 days later that I found out I was cast.
Wow. Do you remember where you were?
I do indeed. I was in rehearsal at Broadway Workshop also. I always talk about Broadway Workshop because there's no way to talk about any of the story without talking about Mark Tumminelli in Broadway Workshop. If you're a kid, go to Broadway Workshop in the city. It's incredible. I was in rehearsal for Wind in the Willows, the musical. I was playing Mr. Toad. I was doing this voice the entire week.
Which I think would have been a good choice for Evan, if I'm going to be totally honest.
I was doing it in the reading and I had the audition the next day and Mark pulled me aside and you're like, stop! What do you have to audition for Dear Evan Hansen tomorrow and you're going to destroy your voice today? But I was in rehearsal and my mom got the call and she didn't want to tell me so that I didn't have to like keep it secret in rehearsal. So I get in the car after and she has a legal pad with a list of everything that I need to know. You're placing Taylor Trench on January 30th. This is what your dressing room is like. Blah, 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 blah. And every single thing just like hit me individually and blew my mind. It was crazy.
Yeah. I mean, who was the first person that you called?
Nobody. Yeah, I had to sign an NDA. I couldn't tell anyone for months.
Don't you hate that?
Yes.
Was there like, you can't tell anyone or you'll die?
That's what it was. And I had no reason to believe otherwise. I didn't tell anyone. Like, we told my family, like my immediate family, and that was it. I couldn't tell any friends. I couldn't tell anyone. It was completely insane.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And your family was really supportive about this, yeah?
Yes, it was, you know, after the Jimmys, I think my mom was like, okay, I can't stop you now at this point. You know, like she was kind of, that was when she was kind of like, I always thought you were good, but I've been watching you since you were little. Of course I think you're good. I didn't know you were really actually good at this. So that was kind of the realization that everyone, myself included, I think, had that people think that I'm good at this. So yeah, they were really, really, really excited and supportive.
Was it terrifying being that age and just sort of being like, now I'm going to star in a Broadway show?
Every single day. Every single day before, every single day I stepped on the stage, it's still terrifying to think about. Yes, entirely.
Well, for all those listening at home, I still get terrified every time I have to do anything, even this. That is very powerful. Who at the theater helped you along?
Everyone. I mean, I have to speak to Liz Kaplan, first of all, who's the vocal consultant on Dear Evan Hansen, who I would be dead in the water if I hadn't had her, and I only called out two times from vocal fatigue, which nobody ever thought was possible.
Really? Yeah, listen to the score, and I call out from vocal fatigue, and I have nothing to call out from. My old stage managers are like, Josh, you're unemployed. And I'm like, I'm out! You can't say anything about it!
It was, nobody thought that was going to happen. But it was, a lot of it was because everyone was so in tune with everything I needed. At the beginning of my run, some of the keys were lowered, like For Forever and If I Could Tell Her were a half step lower. I was only doing a 5-show week because I was in school and also just because they wanted me to build up my stamina. I started doing a 6-show week probably whenever school, so probably in May or June. And they wanted me to go back to 5 shows when I was starting school again. I was like, let me try. Please let me try to do 6 week. It's 6-show week. It's really working for me. 6 shows is the Evan standard, by the way. And so I was like, please let me try. So I was doing 6 shows a week. I only called out, I had a couple like sinus infections and stuff here and there, but From vocal fatigue, it was two times. Because I called it my first week and I was like, I'm never doing this ever again. This is the worst feeling in the whole world to feel like I've let people down. So I just was a monk for a year. My diet was crazy. I didn't ever really see my friends. It was worth it. It was all entirely worth it, but it was hard. It was really, really hard.
Yeah. What about the fandom? Like that immediate kind of fandom?
Yeah. There are a lot of camps to the fandom. There's the camps of, if they're not Ben Platt, we don't want them. And that's fine. You know, Ben, it was
remarkable. That is not fine. But I'm going to say for you, ew.
I've always said, you know, the only thing you do for yourself with that is you deny yourself enjoyment of the show and you deny yourself of really connecting with the story in all of its forms. So you know, that's on them. It's all right. Of course it made me so insecure. And of course I felt like the weight of that on my shoulders every day of like, this is the idea. You know, what Ben did is the idea and I'm not Ben. I have a lot of things, similarities to Ben in so many ways, but I'm not Ben. My Evan is not Ben's Evan. But then on the other hand, you know, they really, really did embrace me. And it's weird to think about now my relationship with the fandom then, because they were all so wonderful and vulnerable and so caring. But now we're kind of at this place with them where we have this very specific group of people who, with me and Alex, who, you know, we left the show together. He's
Alex Boniello.
Alex Boniello, right? Yeah, who played Connor. You did.
He is so good. I saw him in Spring Awakening and then like at a crosswalk and I was like, hi, I love you. He was like, thanks. And I was like, I'm not
scared. He loves you too.
Well, that's sweet.
That's how he is in the world. Don't worry. He and I, it's interesting now that they know us, as opposed to as Evan and Connor, you know, it's been this very weird journey with them. But then I think a staple of Dear Evan Hansen is, of course, you know, what we talk about, the suicide aspect of it and you know, the emotional weight of it and teenagers, you know, need that and will sometimes write to us with really vulnerable, scary messages. And I'll say Jeff Johnson, who is my dresser, he made it all okay. He made everything always okay. He would, you know, sort of shield me from the stuff that I wasn't ready to deal with like letters and things like that. And he is like a father to me. He is the best person in the entire universe.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have to say, like, it's really inspiring knowing you in the sense that I'm a big believer in making your own work and beyond making your own work, making your own happiness. Mm. And when I've seen what you've done with Broadway Jackbox and Broadway Whodunit especially.
Thank you.
It's remarkable. How did all this come about?
All by accident. You know, with Jackbox, it was literally like one of the first days of the pandemic. I think I had been in the city that day because it was literally like the day I had a rehearsal for a reading that we thought was going to happen. Like it was like one of the first days that Broadway was shut down. And I was like, screw this. I hate every second of this. I want to play Jackbox with fun Broadway friends. I texted everyone I knew and I was like, hey, come play Jackbox. And like five people answered. And so we just did this one thing. I was like, yeah, we'll do this more. We'll do this more every now and then. The next morning I wake up to like 30 texts from Alex being like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do this twice a week. We're going to raise money for the Actors Fund. We're going to have Broadway guests on this and that. I'll help with the Broadway guests. You deal with the Jackbox stuff. We're going to do this together. I was like, yeah, okay. Sounds great. And then it became this massive, massive thing. So much bigger than us. So, you know, that we've introduced kids to Broadway through Broadway Jackbox. That's insane. Yeah. That's completely absurd. And then with Whodunit, it was just kind of, I think we'd had a couple weeks off of Jackbox and just some downtime. And I don't do well with downtime. And I love murder mysteries. I've been doing murder mystery parties and hosting them.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what my friends and I used to do in high school.
Oh my God, it's the best. I did a couple on Zoom, in fact. That was kind of the test run, was I did one on Zoom for my friends. We did a, oh God, what was the theme? We use nightofmystery.com, which I totally recommend if you're looking for a good mystery party, nightofmystery.com. What was the theme? I can't remember for the life of me. But we did the, it was like a high school thing. Like a prom. It was an 80s prom. That's what it was. And we did this thing. And I was like, this works on Zoom. This is almost more interesting on Zoom. And so we kind of formulated this Broadway Who Done It thing as an opportunity to pay my actor friends money and you know, do something that cost money. And so we were making money, and it's been amazing. We're doing another one pretty soon that we're announcing in the next couple of days. That
who's in it? Oh wait, you can't. Well, this is going to come out way after.
This will come out after. So I'll tell you that yes, it's I've been wanting to do a theme park one for a long time.
Fierce.
And so my brother Matt had the idea to make it a Michael Park themed theme park. And so this one is called Michael Park Presents Michael Park's Michael Park. That's what this one is called. And I'm very, very, very excited about it. It's actually my favorite one we've done in terms of the story, what I've sort of crafted so far, which we're still in the early stages, but it's been really fun. The cast is great. We have it's me, Alex and Will, Michael, Ashley Park is making a couple appearances.
Love her. She's so fun.
Ashley De La Rosa from Mean Girls, Erica Henningsen and Kyle Selig from Mean Girls, Izzy McCullough, Sis. It's going to be really, really fun. It's going to be a good one. We're two seconds away from having you on. We've been waiting for the perfect one to have you on, and it's coming. I feel it, like
when
the energy
it comes
coming.
When it's like Barry's Bar Mitzvah Murder.
Bar Mitzvah Murder is a really good idea.
I just think that what you do is so fucking incredible. I don't know. I feel like the entire community feels this way about you. They're like, here is a genius. We must protect him at all costs.
That's very, very, very.
We hear he's going to go to some bum school called Harvard, some school for bums when he could just stay here. So are you going to Harvard?
I am going to Harvard. I am indeed. I'm going next year. I just felt right to. I didn't want to do the school online thing, and like
not it's at working Harvard. For
it's exactly, and I like so much of this experience is like I want the normalcy. I want the experience, and like my mom who did pass away in August of last not last year because now it's 2021, but 2019 while I was in Dear Evan Hansen, or was it 20? Is that how time? Yeah, 2019. August 2019. She was a college admissions counselor, and this was kind of the big thing that we would always, like, I wanted to go to a conservatory so badly. She was like, no, you have to have a liberal arts education. You have to have this. And in the end, I let her win because Dear Evan Hansen felt like a conservatory in so many, I was doing normal school, but I was like, I'm learning from the best teachers in the world. So now I want to have a more broad education. And so Harvard was beyond, I think, any of our wildest dreams.
It's amazing, and I know your mama's so proud.
Thank you. She really would have lost her mind at the news. But she helped me with all my applications. Thank God. I don't think I would have gotten in had I not. She was a whiz at the college admissions thing. It was remarkable.
Yeah. Well, she helped raise an incredible, incredible human.
Thank you very much.
Oh my gosh, Harvard. When you're there, you are going to have so much fun. Cambridge is the weirdest place in the world. It's like old school England, like, hey, oh, you have a flag to put here. And like also filthy hippies that are like, yeah, we're in Cambridge, no. Give us money. You're going to have a great time.
I'm so, so excited for, it's not going to be normal. There's nothing normal about Harvard, but just to learn. Like I'm excited to learn everything about theater. I'm majoring in it's a concentration called theater, dance, and media, so I'm learning everything about everything, and I'm just so excited about it. I'm really,
you know,
really,
I'm gonna come up and visit you, and you're please. Gonna be like, this is my weird aunt Josh. And
it's gonna be
her.
The amount of people that have said they're coming to visit me, I cannot wait to have to explain to my roommates like every individual person that's coming to visit. Like there are these two, and I told this to them, there are these two very famous people who are my friends, who I can't say because it's a secret kind of still that we're friends, but
I love that being friends with famous people.
I'll tell you
turns
after
into but, secrets yeah
but I was
no,
like
I get
how
it.
Will I explain like, hey, the two most, like, you know who these people are, and they're the two most beautiful like women you'll ever meet in your whole life, and I need everyone to be cool please. Like, I don't know what that's going to look like in my life.
I really hope that J-Lo needs to stay in your dorm.
Yeah, J-Lo staying with me at Harvard is...
And you're like, this is my Aunt Jenny. Don't be fooled by the rocks that she got. This is my Uncle Lynn.
That neither of those are... You did not hit the nail on the head.
Oh, well. I've been working on my Lin-Manuel impersonation. Do you want to hear it? It's actually really good.
Yeah.
So this is Lin-Manuel as if he wrote Phantom of the Opera, which was like my Dear Evan Hansen when I was a kid.
Right.
So it's like, yo, Christine Daae, always wanted to be up on the stage, not dressed like a page, wish Carlotta would act to rage. At least Raoul is a dear. Wait up. Oh, shit. Oh, damn. Here comes the chandelier. Bump, bump, it's the Phantom. Whoa, whoa, keep your hand at the level of your eyes. It's the Phantom. Whoa. Anyway.
That's
I've been
amazing.
Working hard on it. And if I
can
ever
tell,
make...
it's fantastic.
Thanks. If I ever make a video of Lin-Manuel's Phantom, will you be Raoul?
Yes, I'd be honored.
Fucking pinky swear right now.
Pinky promises are huge for me, Josh.
All right, now we're blood brothers.
Now we'll do blood brothers. Lin-Manuel blood brothers.
Which has been my obsession over quarantine. Yeah. Yes, bootlegs are bad, but there is like the full original British production on YouTube. Yeah. And
oh my God.
Is
I gotta
incredible.
Watch that. It's okay to watch bootlegs. I think it's okay to watch bootlegs. It's not okay to take them, and it's really not cool to sell them. That's
my
agree. Policy.
My thing is, I'm like, is the show closed?
Yeah, that's a
go
big
for
thing.
It.
And I also feel like, I think something that I so encountered was like people judging my performance based on a shitty bootleg of my waving from my first month in the show. Like,
yeah.
That frustrated me. So much. I think that's my biggest, that not my biggest thing with bootlegs, but just personally, like my biggest experience has been just only negative in terms of being on this end of it.
You know, the internet is a really hard place.
Yeah.
And I always say that it's interesting how like the anti-bully crowd can really turn into online bullies real quick.
Yes. Yes. Very, very, very quickly.
I've learned never to read the comments.
I'm still learning that.
It takes time. My first big job was Wicked, and it was like very new to the world, like Wicked. And there was this Witches of Oz site, like the ultimate fan site for Wicked. And I got addicted to going to these chat rooms and reading the most horrifying things about myself or about my friends. And it was like, you know what? I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, I'm still learning that.
Hey, every day is practice.
It's my one piece of advice I always give to everyone who's like coming up in the industry. I'm like, don't read the comments. I'm still figuring that out. But like, that's my biggest piece of advice. And I had to counterweight it so much. I think was part of it was that for every negative comment that stuck in my head, I created like a folder on my phone of just nice things that people said about my performance online, and I would look at it and be like, oh, I'm great, like get really jacked up on it and then go out, and it was temporary, you know. It was
you hear what Eponine 1202 said? I'm fucking great.
I really needed that to counterweight it. It was a hard, that was probably one of the hardest parts of doing Dear Evan Hansen, was just the insecurity of it all, and that facing that as a person and still, you know, reckoning with that.
Well, it's a lot to learn, especially when all of a sudden people feel like they have the right to, you know, to talk about you like you're not there or like you're not a person. And, you know, but I really admire you and I think that you're nailing it.
I so admire you. I really,
you know,
truly
just
do.
Keep doing it. Keep making things. Broadway Who Done It is maybe, as like a true crime nerd and somebody who likes games, like, and you introduced me to Jackbox. I had no idea what the heck it was when I was on it. And now, like, I think I own like every set of it. It's so much fun.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. It's amazing, right? I still don't get tired of it. I'll still play with my friends offline, you know, which Alex, it does not feel similarly. Alex gets very tired of it very quickly, but I love it so much.
Well, good. Well, we all love you so much. You are just an incredible person. And we're going to take a quick break. But when we get back, we're going to take a fan call from somebody who I know is going to geek out that you're here. Amazing. So thank you so much, everybody. Stay tuned. Here's a commercial. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Josh Swallows Broadway. Today, we are gulping the incredible, oh, God, that sounds horrible, Andrew Barth Feldman. That's going to be like the next, good, because I was going to say that could be your next Broadway whodunit is like, who gulped Andrew? But anyway, we have a special little visitor coming on. I don't mean like little, visitor coming on the show, to ask some questions. It's my favorite part of the show. You'll love it. Hey, Alan, who do we have today?
We have longtime listener, first time caller, Margaret Gleason, who wants to ask you a little bit something about, directing. So here we go. Margaret, take it away.
Hi, Margaret.
Hello.
Hi, Margaret.
Hi. Oh my gosh. This is very exciting.
It's very nice
very
to meet
exciting.
You.
It's so great to meet you.
You as well. I'm very excited.
I love your name, Margaret Gleason.
It's a really good name.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Isn't it Joanna Gleason from the original Into the Woods? Am I getting that right?
Yes. I'm not related to her, but I will tell anyone who asks that I am.
You should.
That's smart.
You absolutely should.
A good way of doing it.
Yes, yeah. And she spells it the same way as I do, so that helps give it credibility.
Helps the case in court.
I would go to your parents and say, show me paperwork. Prove to me that I'm not Joanna's long-lost daughter.
Yeah. There you go. You never know. Yeah,
I like that.
So tell me about your question, my friend.
Yeah, so I'm a theater student at Georgetown University. Currently via Zoom from Oregon, but I am interested in pursuing directing. I'm currently in the process of writing a senior thesis application to direct, hopefully, a musical next
awesome.
Year. And I just want to know, kind of, as actors who've worked at higher echelons of theater, what do you value in a relationship with the director? What kind of can make or break that relationship? And then anything you just love. That like, oh, I love it when directors do this or that. Because I want to make sure that I'm creating the best space and experience for the actors who actually are going to go out and tell a story every night.
First of all, I want to give you the biggest hug right now, because that you're already going to be an incredible director, because a big part of it is compassion.
Yes, yes. Just wondering what actors want to happen is like such a big, like so many directors don't do that.
Andrew, what's your experience been? Like, do you think?
I've only worked with such a small handful of, like, quote-unquote real directors, although anyone that directs is a director. But, my biggest experience is, of course, with Michael Greif, who's an absolute genius. And he can also be very meticulous, which isn't necessarily my preference, but was certainly entirely helpful. But I think what he did that I so valued was that he wants a very specific thing to happen, but it's not cookie cutter. You know, he wasn't asking me to be Ben Platt. He wasn't asking me to be Taylor. He came in the room and is just so smart that he saw in me what my potential was as this character, as Evan, and what, you know, I could bring to the table. And he pushed me further and further in that direction to do that thing. And I think that the best director can look at an actor and say, I know what you're supposed to do here. And I'm not, you know, I'm not coming into the room with a certain thing that I want to happen, maybe blocking wise, certainly, or whatever. But in terms of the character, we're going to unwrap this together. I think that that's such a major part of directing is just talking. I think just talking about it is my favorite part of acting. And the little bit of directing that I've done is just getting to talk about the character and the story and unwrapping it and seeing what it means to the actor. And where that should be guided, I think that's really crucial to the process. I think.
Yeah,
well, I think agree. I just rambled for
no,
a
you
long
didn't.
Time. I don't think anything I said made any sense.
It does, and I want to give you a big hug. I think there are a lot of directors who subconsciously don't trust their actors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've worked with the people that give line readings, like all that kind of stuff, and that create very unsafe environments. But that was also, you know, back in the golden age of theater, you know, where people would get fired on the spot for stuff and people, like, it was sort of expected to be treated roughly. I think kindness really goes far.
Yeah.
You know, because we have to recognize every department from the ground up has chosen a difficult life. Whether it's going great or not, it is hard. And it's hard work. And I think directors that really respect that will get the same respect back.
Yeah. And what you were saying about compassion too, I'll say about Michael as well. Sometimes just talking about the story, he'd begin to cry in rehearsal. You know, he was so connected to this story, and I think he wouldn't have worked on the show if he hadn't had that connection and that, you know, hearing him talk about past shows he'd worked on, and you look at his catalog, it's all very emotional, very dramatic. It's because he had this emotional through line into all of these stories and he could really connect with them. And so if you can't put yourself in the shoes of the characters, then you're not really directing. You know, directing is playing all of the characters at once.
Yeah.
That's something that I've always pushed for when I've directed in the past, is being like, I'm going to do the show I feel connected to. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna fight for the script. Like, I had to fight for rights for a show I wanted to do last year, and I was like, I'm not doing it if it's not this version, so we gotta get the rights.
Yeah. You have to do. You know, it's about asking what you bring to the table as a director, especially, you know, with the diversity of stories being told and the lack of diversity in direction. You have to say, like, is this a story for me to have the responsibility to be manipulating or telling? And that's such a huge thing that I think Michael thinks about every time he walks into a room, and I hope more directors continue to do that.
Yeah. One thing that Diane Paulus does that I love and hate at the same time, is she, I think it's like the second week of rehearsal, she goes, okay, on Friday, we're going to do character presentations. You have to come up with a 5-minute presentation. You have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do this in that presentation. And it's so nerve-wracking because everybody is going to be watching us. And we're also still trying to find our characters. But it was a great way to jump off the diving board and start to see what that character meant to that individual. You know? And it was also probably the days in rehearsals that were the most rewarding and bonded people the most. But you're already nailing it. You're already at a great university. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know things are weird right now, being, you know, 2020, 2021. But you're nailing it. And so I can't wait to see what the world has in store for you. And keep on fighting, because that's what it's about. If it doesn't mean anything to you, it's not worth doing.
Yeah.
Thank you. That is great motivation to get this senior thesis proposal written.
You're going to do it great.
Thank you. So if I could just quickly also say to Josh that The Prom is a show that's very, very important to me. And I went to see it twice in summer of 2019. And the first time was with my best friend, who had never seen a Broadway musical before. And we are both part of the queer community and just sobbed our way through it. And we actually had to sit behind Izzy McCalla, who was out that week. And so we got to watch her company.
Wow.
But it was incredible. And you were on as Barry that night and just blew everyone out of the water. It was amazing. Through a turn of events, I ended up back in New York a month later because flights got messed up, and I was with my parents, and I had just come out to them that past spring, and I was like, I want to go see a Broadway show, and I was like, The Prom's closing, I have to go see this again. And so my parents and I went and watched. We had 18 hours in New York and went and saw The Prom again and saw you with Sheldon, which was also incredible in your final week. And it's just a show that's very, it means a lot to me. I teach a prom song in my Zumba class. I've made many of my friends dance to it. So it's just,
If you ever want a special guest at your Zumba class, I will dance the shit out of whatever you do.
Oh my God. I will email you the link and you can sign up.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm bringing everyone, baby.
Oh my God. Truly, truly, please do. I will be emailing you the information, because that would make all the people who come to my class are all theater people, so we would all die.
Oh my God. Well, I love them. And yeah, I'll totally come to your class. That would be so much fun. My downstairs neighbor will fucking kill me, but that's okay. Screw him. I pay bills too. Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you so, so much, Margaret.
Yay, and next amazing. Time you're in New York and things are like
normal
again, and if I'm lucky enough to be working at the time that you're there, I would be honored to take you backstage mm-hmm. to wherever I'm at and show you what the rest of your life looks like.
Oh, thank you. That would be wonderful. That would mean a lot.
Yeah. All right. So much love to you.
So thank nice you meeting so you, Margaret.
I'm obsessed with Margaret. I want to be she directed so by sweet. Margaret.
Yes.
I want to make her a blanket, even though that would take a lot of strength from me, and I don't really make things. I'd more like buy one on Etsy, but...
Sure.
And I'm also obsessed at, like, your first, you know, I hate to say, like, you know, mainstream director was Michael Greif.
Yeah.
I've only met cool. him once. It was at a party, and I just pretended like I didn't know who he was, and we got along famously.
He's quite the character. I love him dearly. He's just wonderful. He's just lovely. He emailed about Ratatouille recently just to check in. He's emailed a picture of his dog for New Year's. He was just great. He was incredible to learn from. I'll never ever forget that experience.
And Ratatouille.
Yes.
I mean, what an incredible thing you guys made.
Who'da thunk? Who'da thunk? Certainly not me.
Did you write your own stuff for that?
No, my friend Nathan Fossbinder, who's an incredible composer. You may remember him from that video called Dear Evan Ono, the video where he's like, on the outside, always looking in.
Okay.
That's him. And he's a composer. He's an incredible composer. He wrote that song that I sang, Anyone Can Cook. And I was the first person they asked about it because I had done that TikTok. So there was no idea who else would be in it, how much money we would raise, just how huge that over 90 people would be behind the scenes making this happen. It was completely insane.
What was the total of what you raised?
It was $2 million.
For the Actors Fund or for Broadway Cares?
For the Actors Fund.
Oh my
For the Actors
God.
Fund. $2 million for the Actors Fund. Never, ever, ever, ever did. I can't even fathom the number 2 million and what that means.
Like, I mean, in times like this where I have so many friends that of all ages that are having to leave New York and try to find a new career, $2 million for the Actors Fund will be life or death to some people.
Yes, yes. That's saving so many lives. I can't even... It was the silliest, most fun endeavor. And it's weird that to a certain demographic, I'm now the guy from Ratatouille. Like I did a car parade for my friend recently, and he, like, his high school friends, like, pulled him over. They're like, is that the guy from Ratatouille? Like, and I am indeed the guy from Ratatouille now. That's hilarious. That is
Do
so
people
terrible.
Try to pick you up being like, hey, I saw you on TikTok, and, like, these are my lips.
You say that as though AI, there are people that I interact with on a regular basis and that I go out and be, no, that doesn't happen. I haven't been in the world long enough, I think, for so long, like, my whole thing was that I was underage, you know what I mean? So, like, there was no clear path for me, really. And I was in a relationship for a lot of Dear Evan Hansen, too, so, like, it was just a lot of, There was no world for that to happen, and I don't think there still is.
I'm still waiting. Oh my God.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm not underage anymore, so it theoretically.
So this is going to be really hot. I'm going to do it as Wilford Brimley, who I don't think Andrew would know, but Wilford Brimley was the guy who ate Quaker oats to beat his diabetes.
Oh, no, I know Wilford Brimley. Yeah, I know
Wilford Brimley. I'm Wilford Brimley, and I have diabetes. All right.
Yeah. I'm familiar.
Hi, Andrew. My name's Wilford.
Hi, Wilford Brimley.
Now, listen.
Okay.
No homo or anything, because that's... Right. I don't do that. But
no, I mean, no. Yeah, that's... Yeah.
My wife's been gone because of the COVID for a while, and I've got $500 in my pocket. Even more in Bitcoin. Hear me out. Oh, damn it, Wilford. You're scaring the boy.
No, I've been looking to get into Bitcoin, Wilford.
Well, it just so happens I've got a room at the Times Square Hilton and $500 plus the Bitcoin with your name. Would you find that sexy?
Bitcoin? The Bitcoin reeled me in.
Listen, I'm going to keep this. I'm going to keep this in my wallet now, for now on. Whenever I see you from now on, I'm going to try to pick you up with Bitcoin.
With Bitcoin. Yeah, go for it.
I'll even buy you a drink and be like, do you guys accept Bitcoin?
Accept Bitcoin? That's a real turn on for me.
If somebody can pay
for my drink that I still also can't do that yet. I can't drink. But if somebody were to pay for my drink with Bitcoin, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, look at Uncle Wilford right here. Diabetes all the way. Andrew, I love you. I hope that your next whodunit is Who Killed Wilford Brimley.
Oh, great.
And thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show. Everybody that I know is just obsessed with you in the healthiest way. Like, you know, Chrissy Ann, one of my first big jobs was with her, and she's like a big sister to me. And I mean, the words that she has about you being so kind and sweet, I mean, you're just universally loved. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for the art that you make.
Thank you.
Keep making that art and keep inspiring all of us, please.
Thank you so much, Josh. And thank you so much for having me. I love the podcast so much. I can't wait to hear this. Anytime I'm here, I just love it so much. And I love you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks. I love you too. All right, little Batchaz. I'm just kidding. You're not Batchaz. I hope that you guys have a great day. Thank you so much for listening. I'm wishing you all love, joy, happiness, success, growth, and laughter in these crazy times. Thank you, Andrew, for being here. And we will see you next time on Josh Swallows Broadway. Bye. Josh Swallows Broadway is produced by Alan Seals, Dory Berenstein, and myself, Josh Lehman, with associate producer Elizabeth Wheelis. And special thanks to our Patreon producers, David Rimmer and Josh Harris. You can join them. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/Josh Swallows Broadway. Leave a rating. Leave a review. I read them. This is how I continue living. Help me live. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for keeping Broadway alive, and swallow you soon. Josh Swallows, Josh Swallows, Josh Swallows, Josh Swallows
Broadway. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.